The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets Live. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I am absolutely delighted to speak to accomplished UK investor and stock picker, Richard Crowe, alias Cotney Rebel. So, big welcome, Richard.
Morning, Paul. Nice welcome to you too.
Yeah,
so well, listening. A lot of people are listening.
Yeah, well, a bit like your beloved Arsenal football team. I understand your portfolio has had a bit of a rock star performance over the past 12 months. So maybe we can start there. I don't suppose you could just quickly fill us in on what's been happening since we last spoke.
Yeah, well, it's been quite a good year. Well, I say quite a good year. It's been a fantastic year. But, you know, starting off the beginning of last year, the first few months, I was down probably 3%, something like that, over that period, which was really poor. And you sit there and you sort of think, is this market ever going to bounce? You know, and everyone's talking about it. And you know, it's got better. The dangerous thing is to give up. You know, you've got to hang on in there and always think, you know, the market's going to come around at some point. And if you go and give up and you're out of the market then. So I was pretty well invested, not 100%, but quite well invested. And then April came and it was just like a complete change of worlds. You know, I think something happened in the financial markets that meant April the 1st, a lot of money was going to the market. And since then, since April the 1st, I'm up over 100% since April.
That was the 1st, that was the liberation. That was the liberation day tariffs, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And so you had all those, you know, that wallop the market at that point. Fortunately, you know, I'd sold the rolling top on the AWO1, which is the FTSE World Index, saw that rolling over. That gave me a bit of a scare, and I'd got out before Trump even come out with his tariffs. It wasn't much of a trade, really. I think the market fell 15% afterwards. I was totally in cash at that point. I think I kept some Carclo and I think I kept some Zoic phones as well. But at that point, I sold out completely. And market fell 15%. And I started buying back in straight away because I wasn't expecting a 15% fall. I thought maybe 10% it would drag on. But the market looked like it was going to bounce fast. So I bought everything back more or less, which I'd sold. Or a lot of the stuff that I sold. I kept some cash because I found other stuff to buy. All these recovery plays started popping up at, you know, April, which was like, you know, all they're bouncing, and stuff that I've been watching for ages, suddenly all started. So I moved my cash there. So I probably only saved about 3% for jumping out of the market and trying to get back in again on what I bought. But the period from there, having the cash at the beginning of April, the cash that I had, it left me in a position to buy these things that I probably wouldn't have sold to buy, you know, had I not sold out. So it was a lucky move, a good move in the end, but a lot of luck involved. So, but since then, it's been fantastic. Up over 100% since beginning of April. In actual fact, my ice is up 210%, over 220%, more than that, I think. But my ice is the smallest part of the portfolio. The missus' ice is a bit bigger. I took a lot of cash out of my ice a little while back to build the house and stuff. So,
good.
So that's been where the market's gone. So the chart is really good on my ISA. Fantastic. I keep taking screenshots of that one because I'll never see that again. So,
you're going to win the Champions League, aren't you, Richard? Hands down. So, just as you look at your portfolio now, how much? What percentage do you have in cash, if any at all?
No cash. I'm completely fully invested. You know, I'm scratching around. It's probably, you know, so no cash, is probably about $9,000 floating around there. If I see a trade, I have to buy it on an extended settlement with my broker and then sell it before the settlement comes. So on the T5 or T10s and stuff like that. The old way of doing it, not spread bets. So I'm not interested in spread betting or CFDs or that. So do it the old school and do it on extended settlement. And but I've got no cash. I'll have to sell something. In actual fact, last week I had to sell. I closed my Currys as a trade, quite a big trade. And it got to back up to the high, so I got out with some cash there. I've been able to buy a few bits from that. So
good. If you've got little, only a very small amount, hardly any cash at all, then I'm guessing you're quite bullish on the outlook for UK small and mid caps going forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, all the indexes are breaking out to new highs. You know, small cap indexes hit a new high, and mid caps have risen quite well, but the small caps have been really sort of, actually, in fact, percentage wise, they've all done about the same, about 25%, I think, since August, since April. So I think that's quite a decent move up on the small cap, the FTSE 100 and the 250. But you can see the values in the FTSE small cap index. That's where even and AIM has gone up as well. You know, AIM has broken out as well, and it's done about the same. So they've all done about 25%. But the real value and the safe value is in the FTSE small cap index, I think, because you've got a lot of, you know, more trustworthy small cap stocks that have done it before, and you can rely on more than maybe a lot of the ones in AIM. And the FTSE 100 is a bit big now. They're not going to grow that fast. There'd be a few in there that grows fast, but you know, the real stuff is in the small cap and the 250, really, I think.
Good.
So, okay, look, yeah.
Okay, well, let's run through some stocks. We've got Tim. He's asking about, I think you own it and you've done rather well in it. It's Goodwin, the sort of specialist engineer, which is a sort of like a holding group owned by a family with lots of different sort of moving pies. Anyway, it's not quite the usual sort of chart associated with your sort of like previous sort of like expertise in bowls and turnarounds, but it's certainly made you a lot of money regardless. What's your sort of latest view on Goodwin?
Well, I'm up 300% though since April, and I'm up 200% since October, or 100% or 200% since October. These things have moved so fast, I can't quite remember, but 300 since April, and since about October, 200% probably. And it's like, I've had these before. I held them in the 2000s, and I sort of like seven-bagged them. And I always liked it as a company because it's family-owned. It's 140 years been, you know, like a limited company. And it's better than Rolls-Royce. You know, they've gone there 20 years longer than Rolls-Royce. They've been on the market. Well, they've been a company anyway. I don't think they listed that far. They've been listed since about in the 1990s. But they never had to be bailed out by the government like Rolls-Royce. So they managed to come through all of this. You know, and they're still going with the same. They've got four directors that are still Goodwins running the company. All come up through. You know, it's a fantastic company. It's got a big apprenticeship site on there where they train apprentices to get their staff. So it does all, it does everything right. And yeah, it's an engineering company sort of, which does sludge pumps for mines. It's got the best sludge pumps going that, you know, can pump water with all the crud in that miners have, so they don't get jammed up and stuff like that. They do check valves for fuel and nozzles for big oil fittings. And that. They also do blast proof cabinets for nuclear. So they make a lot of those, and I think they've got to do 30. They've got like an order for about 30 odd going forward for these to the government, you know, in this country. No, nobody else can make these things. They're huge. They do huge casting, massive casting. So these things are big. They have to be X-rayed once they're done to make sure that they're all, you know, perfect and stuff like that. So they've trebled their X-ray department for the just recently, so they've got the stuff to do, the engineering work they've got coming in, and they also do casting powders to cast, and they do castings themselves, but they also do the powders for jewellery and who cast like that. And they've got a fire extinguisher business which makes fire blankets, the only blankets that can put the best blankets and fire extinguishers to put out lithium fires. These things are all patented, you know, so they've got loads of patents for stuff like that. And they also have got a radar company as well, which they bought, and they've batted that into shape, and that's starting to sell radar systems down in Cornwall and various places. So that's all good. But they've been picking up orders for Northrop Grumman to make parts for submarines. So they've got a £12 million order from them, which is probably going to go to £120 million. And that's what they say anyway. So it's absolute fantastic growth there. Over the last 6 years, they've had 40% compound growth per year, 40%, what, 39-40% a year for the last 6 years. And that looks like continuing. So I'm thinking to myself, they're on a PE, they're probably on a PE now of about 15, on a forward PE of 15. By the time the results come out and they've beaten on this, that, and the other, they're probably on a forward PE of 15, 40% compound growth per year. They've got
Is that just on that, just on that one, just on, Just on that one, Richard, I mean, essentially they say they've got PBT estimates of around, I think, higher than £71 million pounds PBT for this year. But if you run that, and then that's on for this year, it's on effectively a 35 times P or 33 times P. But what you're saying is they're going to get to 15, they're going to grow again those earnings by 100%.
Certainly 100%, but it's difficult because what they've actually got, they've got that, they've done more than half that earnings already, what they've said. You know, in the first half, they've done 351 pence in earnings in the first half. There's still going to be growth into the second half. So they're a very cautious company. So when they say 71 million, they'll do 71. They said, we have a high degree of confidence. Well, if they said they had a high degree of confidence, you can pretty much be sure they know they've done that already. And then there'll be bunts on top of that. So I think they're going to do better than the 71 million by some way. So, you know, if you said 50% growth on net in the coming year from the existing business, you know, you're up around 10, 11 pound, £11 a share, you know, £12 a share earnings. Right. So they've also got a big factory they've built on site. It's a £150 million project. The planning permission was for this factory. In the planning, it was described as a £150 million project. They haven't even RNS'd this or put it in their annual report. And they're doing stuff for like Northrop Grumman, which is defence stuff. So there's something big they're doing there that they haven't even told people about yet. That's that side of the business. So if you work on that now for what they're earning, now they've developed a product called Decoya. It's a super plastic. DuPont make one and Victrex make one. Victrex make Peak and DuPont make Vespel. And they're IQE plastics. The patents have run out on both of these things. So they've sort of like reverse engineered Vespel and they've made their own product done differently. And it's, according to the company, they say it's 30% better than Vespel. So this stuff sells at £1,000 a kilo. That's how much DuPont is selling this for, up to £5,000. If you take it as powder, it's probably $1,000 a kilo. If you have it made into rods, extruded rods and stuff, or into shapes, then it can be as much as $5,000 a kilo. So they've taken this, and they've said that this year, the first year, they're targeting 40 tons of the stuff. So that's a million pounds a ton. So it's like having a silver mine in your own factory. Do you know, it's twice the price of, you know, it's going to be like that, just making silver in a factory, making silver. And they're going to be able to sell a product far better than Vespel that DuPont make, where the patents run out. And it's going to be better. It's going to be cheaper. And I think they're targeting 140 tons of this stuff. Well, you start doing the sums, you know, when you start doing the sums and you think also, you know, it's patented, so they're going to get patent box tax relief. So they're only going to pay probably 10% tax on it, I would imagine. So not only is it high margin, massive margin, and they only target high margin businesses with big moats and big barriers to entry, and that's all they've done since they were in the oil industry back 10 years ago, and they saw that slowing. They've diversified everywhere else, and they've spent about $25 million developing this product. Well, if the R&D is finished, the bulk of the R&D is finished now, they're going to save about $5 million a year in R&D. And, you know, they can tweak this stuff for customers so you can have a bit more, I don't know, however it's made, they can make it a little bit different for customers. So if you want something, but it's lighter than plastic, you know, lighter than metal. It's harder than ceramics. And they use these things in like bushes in Rolls-Royce engines and airplane engines and car parts and stuff like that. So the industry uses tons of this stuff, the
microprocessors.
Microprocessor companies have got use it as well. And, you know, automotive industry, loads of big industry use this stuff. And, you know, I suppose it's probably in Dyson vacuum cleaners probably because, when you take these things apart, they're plastic. You pull them apart, the plastic doesn't smack, break no matter what you do to it. So it's probably in lots of other things that we're not talking about. But, you know, so this is a fantastic product. It's patented. It's going to be better than the thing that's going at the moment. And they're going to sell 140 tons of the stuff.
How long is it going to take to adopt it, though, Richard, in terms of obviously it's a fantastic, lightweight, sort of like high temperature and low temperature tolerability type of a new product. But clearly it's going into very sensitive areas like semiconductors, defense interests, and all this sort of stuff. And therefore, there's got to be a certification for it.
Yeah, there is. It's undergoing certification by independents already. So, and they expect to start selling from the start of this new financial year. So, commercially selling it. So, you know, I think they're targeting like 40 million quid's worth of the stuff in the first year. You know, and it's, the company says it can make more profits than the rest of the business put together. They believe this will be more profitable than the rest of the business. So that's in it for free. You know, what the price you're getting for the growth and the PE at current, you know, and I used to follow, well, I still do. You don't find many stocks like it, but Jim Slater's Zulu principle, and he had like a guide of 10 different rules that you needed to meet on a stock for it to be one of these Zulus. And what basically happens is the growth is that good, the PE moves up, the PEG moves up, and you end up trading on a much higher PE because people are prepared to pay for the long, reliable growth. Well, you know, I think over the last 20 years or so, their growth has been something like 19% per annum. And that's why they've been doing all the investment into this Decoya, the product. It's Develco is the company, and they make Decoya. And so their growth has been held back by doing all this R&D and investment. So now that ends, and they've said that they're going to have several years of really strong growth. They've said they're going to do that, and they've paid they're going to pay 58% of it out in dividends to customers. So they've already done a £5.30 special dividend. On top of the £1.40 dividend they paid, there's probably another £1.40 dividend coming along. So I think 58% of what could be not far away, you know, they could be doing 20, 30 pence, £30 a share earnings on the share price. You know, people come along and say, oh, 240, you know, the shares are £240 a share. They're expensive. You know, the price doesn't matter about a share. It's the PE and the, you know, like you can have, you know, one £10 note or five, 10 £1 notes or a £10 note. You've got the same thing. It doesn't matter the price. So how many of them are floating around? And they've never had any share dilution. They remain, the shares remain at this 7 million or whatever it is. Fantastic company, absolutely fantastic. And I stuck a load in there, and I haven't sold any. I was buying up to what price was I buying up to? £210 a share I was buying up to, even after they've gone up. So they are a big percentage of my portfolio now, you know, a massive, not through buying more, just the speed of growth.
What percentage of your portfolio is it, roughly?
Well, probably about, hold on a minute, over 30%. Over 35% of my portfolio. Okay. 35% of my portfolio.
I tip my hat to you there, Richard, because you've found a fantastic stock that's grown and well, absolutely done brilliantly. It's gone ballistic from sort of £6 a year ago from £60 to about £250. So you've done brilliantly on it. And to have so much money of your portfolio onto it, that just says everything.
The problem is there's no forecasts or anything from brokers. So they've gone into 250. There's all these FTSE 250 funds that haven't got any research to say how much they're going to make. And suddenly they're like, speed they shot up into the FTSE 250. All these FTSE 250 managers say, who's this good winner's just come into the FTSE 250? We didn't even see them on the radar, you know, and they're in there. And now they're scrambling around trying to find research and everything. There's some good stuff on Research Tree. If people go on there, there's one little broker coverage. It's not got forecast, but it tells you all about what they're doing. There's another, the Curious Compounder or something, it's got a good thing, it's all written out, but you know, loads of good research there to, you know, look at. And
brilliant. But okay,
fantastic stuff. I'm expecting it to do great things still from here.
Good. I'll have a good look at it myself. Another one I think that's done rather well for you. Brian is asking about Saga, which is the expert in all things sort of like for people over 50. It's had a bit of a transformation. It used to be sort of concentrated on insurance, and then sort of like done a joint venture with a proper insurer, and now just sells affiliates. And then the main part of the business is a travel and leisure business with two or three. I think it's got two big cruise ships and then a river ship as well. But the shares, well, I mean, they're another rocket ship. How do you see this one going forward?
They're my second big stock, and they have got the same amount in them as I've got good. In actual fact, I looked at the weekend, and they are exactly on the same percentage each other. So they're both on 35% of my portfolio, which is scary. But, you know, it's got there through growing, not got there through putting money into them. So I can't, you know, be too worried about that. So fantastic company. They were started by Roger De Haan's dad back, 75 years ago, actually. 75 years ago this year. So the company is as old as the people they carry about at last. So, you know, 75-year-olds is the is their average age is 75 years, the average person that they take on their cruises. They only do cruises for people over 50. So they came to market, I can't remember how long ago, and that the De Haan sold out to private equity about 20 years ago on 4x sales. Now they're trading just over one time sales, which is shows you how cheap they were just a year ago. So they bought two great big cruise ships just before COVID. They had them delivered just as COVID arrived, and that just decimated the business. You know, they was just taking all this money to go and get these ships, and then they couldn't use them, and so the debt just started racking up, and profits were non-existent. And, you know, they started making losses. So the chart just plunged from about 30-odd quid. I can't remember what it got up to. It's probably somewhere around 30-odd quid, down to £1, down to nearly a pound.
You're right. Yeah, there were 30 quid in about 2017.
Yeah, and they've got... Ewan Sutherland became the CEO. He became CEO. He came from Superdry. And I've... You know, in all honesty, I've never sort of rated him as a CEO, to be honest. He's been here, there, and he's been at the co-op, and he's been at several other places, and he sort of managed to build up a reputation. But, you know, my personal feeling is that while he was there, it wasn't that great. And then just over, about 18 months or so ago, they got rid of Ewan Sutherland and brought in Mike Hazel from the co-op. He became CFO, and then a few months later, he was moved up to CEO, and Sutherland went. At that point, I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, you want to see a board change for something to happen. The chairman had already come back and put £100 million of his own money into the company to refinance it. So they've got the ships, they've got money to keep going. And you could see, you know, De Haan must have plenty of money for what he sold out the company, you know, like 20 years ago. He must still be well loaded. And you could see he wasn't going to let this company go under, and so he put the 100 million in. Some of the other investors put 50 million in. He bought a stack of shares, and he's now got 27%. He started buying shares last April. It was bang on April that him and Mike Hazel bought shares, and the debt was for the first time started to fall rather than rise. And at that point, I just thought to myself, this is it. You know, like, it's funny, Paul Scott, straight after COVID, he was on about these, like, and he made me keep an eye on them. You know, he was saying about the assets and everything else. I'm surprised he didn't pile in, you know, when it happened as well, because at that time, I remember for months listening to him, and he made a good case, Paul. And so that reinforced my idea to keep an eye on them, and I watched them ever since in my recovery place. That's what you got to do for recovery. You don't get recovery in a year. You sometimes have to wait 4 or 5 years. Make a list of them and just wait till you see the ones that start recovering. Don't be too anxious to, you know, buy a recovery and think you're going to miss a bottom. You see the bottom. Miss the very bottom, but make sure it is the bottom, really. So so I bought in April, and the profits are just absolutely starting to soar now. You know, the debt's falling. It's now down below 4x, and they can refinance. I worked out that if they refinance their debt, well, they're going to pay the debt down from 4x to 2x over the next 3 years. If they do that, the debt reduction is going to save them about 20-odd million a year, just in interest. And then if they refinance the other half that they keep hold of, the debt will fall on that as well. So if they're roughly doing 50 million of profit now, by the forecast, 3 years' time, the debt reduction alone is going to get them near to where their 100 million target is without any regret. And they've got loads of other stuff as well. Like you say, the insurance, they sold off. The big bugbear was the insurance underwriting. And they couldn't get that right no matter what. And they were constantly losing money on that. So they passed that on to, sold it on to Aegis. And they're just going to be, they're now just insurance brokers. So they just sell the insurance, and he just takes all the risk on, you know, the underwriting and doing the actuary stuff on it. So that's good. They've got a database of 9.7 million customers, 7.5 million of them are contactable. Customers buy the magazine. They've got a Saga magazine. They don't send them out for free. The customers buy them on a subscription. They've got £3 billion in customer savings. They do savings accounts for them. They've done a new deal with NatWest for financial products for their customers. There's so much there to get a recovery from that it is just fabulous. And I think currently they're trading on about a PE of 13 now for the year end. Yeah. Yeah. Which is, you know, based on Singer upgraded last week with a 615p target and Deutsche Bank 610, I think. So they've got three brokers out there doing forecasts. But, you know, come the results in a couple of months' time, I think you'll see those targets get moved up again, you know, and it's just got so much going for it. And fantastic, you know, if it's on one-time sales now and gets anything like four-time sales that it sold out to private equity for. Also, it's a great target for someone like Viking Cruises. You know, Viking Cruises, these ships that they bought have now doubled in price. To buy another ship now would cost them double what they paid for just pre-COVID. So if they want to expand and buy another new ship, they've actually got four river cruise ships now, not just one, they've got four, and they're all doing well. They've got a holiday side as well, which is growing profits fast. The whole business, they came out with the statement the other day and everything was ahead. You know, we're up on this. None of these, oh, that was a little bit worse. Everything was good. So they obviously guide well and leave plenty of powder dry. And, you know, if someone like Viking wants to go and buy a cruise ship now, you've got to buy a new cruise ship, or you come and take Saga over. We've got two brand new ships nearly, you know, only 4 or 5 years old, and you have their business off of them once they, you know, as the debt start to fall and the profits are rising, you know, it's, or someone like that, if they want a couple of cruise ships, because Saga's really small compared to like the Viking. Viking's massive, and there's a lot of other big cruise companies as well, but their real speciality is targeting just older people. You know, they spend a lot of time knowing what older people want. And they want quiet holidays, you know, you don't want kids running about, and they, you know, they appreciate good advice and all stuff like that. So, fantastic company. And it's up 300% since April as well. So,
yeah, I mean, just on valuation, I think it trades at about 8.5x EBITDA. And you've got Royal Caribbean and you've got Carnival. They're both on about sort of like 8 or 9 times. So they're in line with the cruises. I think 75% of Saga's revenues come from the cruise line and the holiday section. And I guess the one question is, because they're doing so well and the yield or the utilization rate of the ships is sort of 90% at the moment, i.e. they're basically fully booked going forward. How do they grow that in terms of extra capacity other than buying somebody or spending another sort of like, you know, sort of like 2 years ordering another big cruise ship?
River Cruises, they've got four River Cruises that they charter now. They don't actually own those ships. And there's plenty of growth in the River Cruise side. And the people who use the River Cruises tend to move up to the Atlantic Cruises later on. About 94% capacity they're at the moment, I think. And but for every 1% they put on, that every 1% they can put on that capacity, which is tough to get to, you know, you're not going to get to 100%, but you know, 98%, that adds 2.5 million to their profits. And also the per diems, the per diems, 600 million, every pound they put on the per diems, which is like how much customers actually spend. Every pound they add onto that adds 600,000 to the profits. So, you know, if you can stick your per diems up, which people do. So they do like, you know, it's all inclusive. So people go there and they put, you know, you sit there and you think, all these cruises that run all inclusive, you know, you get these great big guys going in there and eating everything they can eat and drink, you know, getting smashed out of their brains every night and spent drinking so much that they have to limit it. They said, you know, someone was telling me, they were saying at the recent meeting just after the results, most old people go on and have one or two drinks in the evening. And, you know, they have a glass of wine and that's it, that does them. And you think, you know, you can, you're not taking a big risk on doing stuff like that, are you? You're not going to get eaten out of us at home and what have you. So if they can, any little tweak up in the prices, they pick people up from the door, pick you up in a car, take you to the place. So you haven't even got here, pick you up when you get off the boat, they take you home. So easy for people. And, you know, I heard stories about, you know, little old people, little old women and their husband has just passed away and they want to go on a cruise. They want to go and meet another fella or something like that. And it's like, well, 1830s for the 75, 90s. So,
Yeah, it'd be quite interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah, it'd be quite interesting to be on a boat, wouldn't it, with a bunch of Arsenal supporters. That'd be fabulous. That would definitely drink you to the ground. You know, you'd be celebrating to the rafters. Let's move on. We got financial services. Let's go. Ian, he's asking about Funding Circle, which is another one I think you've done very well out of. Shares of these guys have basically got a platform business that allows institutional money to find small, medium-sized UK private companies, and it places that capital with them as loans. And then it's got a sort of like very fast-growing FlexiPay business that offers short-term loans to the same clients, but that's on their own balance sheet, on Funding Circle's landing sheet. But anyway, the shares have done well. What's your latest on this one?
Well, I had sold out on these at about, they hit like a plateau, I think, whereabouts was it? Yeah, I sort of hit this plateau around last November, and I sort of thought they'd got a little ahead of themselves, so I'd sold out there. But then a couple of weeks ago, they put out a trading statement, which was better than I expected, sooner than I expected, and so I bought back in, got on that trading statement, and they've had a bit of a rally there, but it is a fantastic company, and what they actually do, they use AI machine learning to work out the credit ratings of small businesses, and it's more accurate than insurance companies actually working, finance companies actually working out the risk involved themselves by, you know, going to Expedia and all these places and doing what they have to do. So they literally find these companies, they run their software across them and say to them, oh, you know, could look at the software runs it across it and says, this is a safe bet. And then they pass these loans out to other companies, and the companies then take on the loan. And the companies find that the loans are more secure than what they've actually worked out themselves. So it's an AI business, you know, machine learning, that part of it is an AI business. And their profits are going up 100%. Their recent earnings are up 100% per annum, and they're forecast to go up 100% again here. And you sort of think on a PE of about 15, are they 14 or 15, I think, 100% earnings growth on PE of 15, and they've got 115 million cash, unrestricted cash. It's too cheap. It's just too cheap. So I think the life's come back to them again. People suddenly got interested because their trading statement, they've just upped their forecasts by about 20% and said they're bringing their earnings a year forward. So next year's earnings have been done this year. And I say to myself, are they going to bring forward the following year back to next year, forward to next year? And if they do, it's about 12 pence earnings this year, the year coming up, if they do that, which will be pretty huge compared to where they were. And so they're growing at a real pace. They've got all that cash. And it's a great business. I can't see, you know, like at some point people are going to see it from my perspective, I hope. And I think to get that growth on that PE is fabulous, especially when they've got that much cash, you know, over 100 million. They're doing share buybacks. The number of shares have plummeted. I think that it's down about 20% less shares than they had last year, so that's helping boost the EPS as well. So the forthcoming trading update will be very interesting to hear when they bring out their results. Very clever girl, Lisa Jacobs, and she took the helm a few years ago, and she's proved herself, I think, since she's been there. And they got rid of the American business, which they had, and that was the making of Funding Circle by getting rid of that. That was. So I think they literally bought it, and then they sold it for more than they bought it for within like a year. So it was a decent bit of business, but they can focus on the UK, and they know what they're doing here, and it's that's where you want to be. You don't want to be out there trying to compete with the Yanks in on their market. You know, we don't do a lot. We don't do that well on there. You know, out in America, British companies a lot of the time. Even in finance, it's tough. You know, it's pretty cutthroat. There's a lot of choice out there. But over here, they've got a stolen march on funding small businesses so that they can avoid the banks. And then, of course, they've got this FlexiCard Pay as well, which is going, you know, it's like doubling sales 100% a year at the moment. That'll probably slow, but it's growing at a fast pace at the moment. And that introduces customers continuously back to the business again. So by constantly sending out, you know, statements about your credit card and would you fancy a business loan or, you know, do you need this or our loan rate would be lower here and there. They're constantly talking to the customers more. So it don't only act as a way of making money. It's also promotes the rest of the business as well. So, very well run, cleverly run.
How resilient is the business in a sort of tough economic cycle if we had a sort of recession? Because obviously most of its business comes from small, medium-sized, very small, medium-sized sort of like UK private companies.
Well, I think they went through COVID and stuff like that and they still did well. And you sort of think to yourself, a lot of businesses were stressed then. Mm. And I don't think they were... Although the share price got sold down, I don't think they did too badly. They carried on, you know, performing reasonably well, but they were quite young then. So I don't know. They're probably not going to be. You know, if we get in some sort of financial mess, it's probably not going to be a place to hang about in. But until you see something like that coming along, I think there's quite several years to go. Yeah, I think the way I see the market, I think we're at a low rather than a high. You wouldn't believe it, but AI seems to be doing an awful lot more than people give it credit for, I think. You know, it's coming along and it's affecting a lot of businesses very quickly, making them more efficient. And I think that's the start, like the tech boom was the start of after the tech boom, we had the start of another boom in the stock market for 7 years up until the financial crash. I think AI is going to be a similar type of thing. You know, everyone says, oh, what's AI? And the next minute, before you know where you are, you're using it, like mobile phones, you know. Smartphones. Everyone wondered where they were, and then suddenly you've all got one in your pocket, and you didn't even realise it was coming. Good. So,
okay, good. Well, we'll have to move up the pace a bit here because we've spent on your one. We've got George. He's asking about another position that you, I think, was your largest last time, Zote Foams, which is a sort of like industrials business. I think you had 25% of your portfolio back in sort of like September or October when we previously. This is basically supplying really specialized high performance foams into all kinds of industrial applications, aerospace and stuff. But half the sales go into these, as you were talking about it, these really top-notch sprinting sort of running shoes from Nike. The shares have done pretty well, as you said before.
Yeah, well, I did have 25%. And because the other two positions have grown so fast, it's shrunk everything else, you know, inordinately. So it's not 25% anymore. Although, in fairness, I did snatch a tiny bit out of those to buy a few more Saga. But basically, for years, they've made sheet foam and for all sorts of industrial businesses. And it's just been a commoditized business. Then they developed, almost by accident, a foam that goes in shoes. And they didn't intend it to go in shoes, but they found it really springy and really strong. Thought, oh, this will go in shoes nicely. Running shoes, went to Nike, not interested. It took three years to get Nike interested. In the end, Nike tried it out, put them in shoes, sent some guys running up and down the track, and it boosted their, I'll say like 100 metres, it boosted their performance by about 0.4 seconds. Don't sound a lot, but that is like, that makes a difference between winning and coming fourth. And so they were leaking about absolutely great, fantastic. Nike took did a deal and they now take 49% of Zote Foams' foam. The Zote Foams then got into something called Resource. They made themselves designed a recyclable packaging for milk cartons and stuff, developed this product, was putting it out to everybody, but they couldn't get anybody to be interested in manufacturing it. And so in the end, the CEO left. They more or less canned it. The CEO left and went to... where else he's got his Cropper. He's at James Cropper now. So he left and they brought in Ronan Cox from Coates Viola. He's been there for 20 years, market manager. He's been all over Europe. He's been everywhere with Coates. He knows every, he must know every guy across the world that he needs to talk to. So that now they are doing 3D shaped foam. They can make foam into 3D precise shapes. And they're doing a joint venture out in Vietnam to supply the shoe industry out in Asia. And a guy from Nike has gone from there to Zoke Foams to manage all this with a family company out there that make soles for shoes. So over the next year, they're going to move a lot of their production out to the Far East for shoes, which is going to save all the energy costs that they have over here because it's far too high. It's going to save the national insurance. It won't be lumbered with the minimum wage that we've got over here. So it'll reduce their costs massively once they get this thing up and running out in the Far East. They supply lots of really technical foams to like the aerospace industry now and stuff like that. So they've just made another, just taken on another great big autoclave out in the US to make their foams with. So this is far more efficient and will save money as well. And they can still use the older autoclave when volume starts to really pick up. And the company's trades on a PE of 10. I get it. You know, it used to be a commoditized business. Now it's moving to much more technical stuff. Trades on a PE of 10. And it was trading on a PE of 40 at one point when they were several times in their past. They've been on really big PEs. And pays a dividend. It's just bought another company for out in Spain, another foam company that's hot on recycling foam and stuff like that. So great company, but just at the moment, because the joint venture is being done out in the Far East, it's taking a bit of time for investors to, I suppose, they want to see that up and running. And but the forecasts still keep getting raised. I think they're on the latest forecast, beer 40, so cheap. I like them. Ronan Cox seems like a really switched on guy. When you hear the proper comments from the city, you sort of hear good comments. You know, when other people sort of say, oh, it's only foam, you sort of think, oh, yeah, well, you know, that's when they buy it, when people think it's only foam. You know, when they start all getting excited, it's Nike running shoes here, there, and everywhere, and they're charging £500, £600 a pair for these things. And it sinks in that they're going to make loads and loads more of them. Then that's when all the punters suddenly start racing in there, and you want to be ahead of them, I think. But
what sort of percentage? What sort of percentage is the stock now in your portfolio?
Oh, it's gone down to below 10% now because the other two have just gone. You know, I didn't buy 70%. I'd only get, in last April I was probably only on about 7% of it. In fact, I think Goodwin, I was only on about 5%. I weren't totally, I put them in my seven stocks for the year, you know, my Magnificent Seven at the start of the year, and they were the best performer. But I didn't expect that at that time of the year. I was still been waiting for this Decoya to start doing its stuff. So, but I really bigged them, bought a big stake as soon as I saw the chart starting to do the bowl up. And I bought a much bigger stake then, and then because when it took off, I added more as well. So, and Saga, I only bought about 5% of them to start with until I saw the chart starting to properly move. So, but yeah, you know, it shrunk everything else in the portfolio magnificently. So
that's the best way for it. Okay, let's move to building products. We've got Oliver asking about Marshalls, which I think is in this year's Mag 7. Or the Cockney Rebel Mag 7. The shares haven't yet performed because obviously there's a lot of poor sentiment at the moment with the house builders, the building products. These guys do paving stones and they do roofing parts and other building parts. But they've got a bit of debt which they're paying down. The shares have, as I say, they've performed quite poorly. But what do you see here? What's the twinkle in the Cockney Rebel eye?
Well, they had the previous CEO Pullen. He's just gone. And you know, sort of, when he came there, he's only been there like a couple of years, and he'd got sort of like a CV that said he was this, that, and the other as a recovery guy. He'd been there, seen and done it. And it didn't look like he was doing it this time. The chart should have been turning up after about 9 months. If you've got a new CEO and they know what they're doing, you see that chart moving 6 months after, or 9 months starts to firm, and then you hear the good news about a year down. None of that good news has come. And the COO is it Simon Bourne, or it's his name is Bourne, the Bourne Identity, is taking over as from CEO to CEO. He came in as a temporary CEO, and then I thought they would probably make him permanent CEO if he proved himself, and he seems to have done that. And they're talking about, you know, growth picking up, and they sound very positive. And so at that point, you know, it's the landscape businesses, the margins are really low on that. You know, they're down at about sort of 2 or 3% compared to the rest of the business is doing quite well. They've got to get the landscaping side. So, but I watched the company presentation, and I watched it, and they've got the CEO on there, and he's not only got the CFO there, he's got this Simon Bourne, or I think his name's Simon Bourne, it's Bourne anyway, and he was stood there to the side, and he was there to handle the tough questions the CEO couldn't answer. And when they do these presentations, I like the CEO to be able to answer all the questions that the CFO can't answer. And he didn't look like he was on the game. And because Bourne then has then become CEO, and that looks a good move. And they're as cheap as I've seen them, Marshalls at the moment. And it's not going to take a lot to turn around. The sentiment's bad. So, you know, not the one I'm most confident in, because it's a sector that I'm not a big fan of at the moment, but there's a lot of probably low hanging fruit they can do if someone gets in there and knows what they're doing. So we'll see if the COO was really running, you know, could have run the company better than the CEO. And maybe he's been sat there sniping in the background saying, you know, he can't do this and he can't do that. We've got to do this for him. And this is what he wants. And then they say, well, go on then, show us. And he's been in there for a couple of months and maybe he has shown them, you know, and so we'll see. But like I did say at the time, that was my least convincing one out of the seven. I bought it because I think everybody just dislikes the sector at the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's got to change at some point.
So, was there any specific reason for choosing Marshalls compared to something like Genuit or Alamask or Forterra or anything like that? Other than the management team?
Marshalls. Yeah. I like Marshalls as a business. You know, when I built this place, we used a lot of Marshalls materials. Their stuff was always, when I went in there, their stuff always looked nicer than other people. There's Ibstock as well. But if you actually have a look, Ibstock, they look like their chart was starting to sort of like bottom a little bit, like making a little bit of a curve bottom. And one of the other ones, it might be Michael Mersch Brick or something like that. They were Michael Mersch Brick. I think they looked like they were sort of up. So the old three of them looked like they were coming to a point where just the market alone was saying, you know, enough's enough. Yeah. So we'll see. You know, maybe I got it wrong. You know, it will look like a little slight bit of a boulder drop below that. So this may be wrong, but I did say that it's my least confident one. But, you know, I'll probably be surprised at Christmas and bragging about it.
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter when you've had so much heavy lifting done by the rest of your portfolio. It's been fabulous. Okay, we'll definitely have to try and pick it up here, Richard, because I know we're nearly 50 minutes into it. We've only done sort of six stocks, and I know there's plenty to run through. Let's go through sort of like SRT Marine, which basically does really sort of like specialized radar and Coast Guard support services. Massive order book out in Asia Pacific, etc. What sort of attracted you to this? The shares have done again very, very well.
Yeah, I've only just recently bought just a very small holding just to keep my eyes on them. So, but I was reading it and I looked at the sales. You know, over the last 5 years, it's sort of done 8 million sales, 30 million, and dropped to 14, and then it's done 78, 116. It's going to do 123 next year, having already done half that. So, they make radar and detection equipment for nautical, anything nautical. So mainly for sovereign states to be able to track everything that's going on around their borders. And they've just launched this product, Nexus, that's just gone out, and it's like a radio box, but you can use it with your mobile phone, and it's instant for people on board. So you can talk to your staff. You can even control things from the phone, I think. So you want to tell a ship to move right, you can do it from your mobile phone or whatever. So, and I just think that's a great area to be in at the moment, you know, with America tracking down ships and boarding them and everything else, and you've got illegal migrants coming to countries and stuff like that, and you've got drugs dealing. Everyone wants to see every boat that's in there around the boundary. So they've got a big deal with Kuwait. They've done about a $200 million contract that's on the bubble there, and they've they've got about another £1 billion worth of contracts that could come in, because these things take time. But it just looks a really interesting business. So, and having watched the company presentation, yeah, got a good presentation on there. Simon Tucker's the CEO, and he does a presentation on the company website every quarter. So, yes. And that's really worth watching. So, okay.
Good, yeah, no, great idea. I mean, just to let for investors, there's also another company which actually in this space, I mean, it's a very hot space. We had Wynwood AI, which was a software company and sort of like a border control, which went for over 6x sales, which is over three times higher than SRT. Just one final question, I says, will it need any more money at all, Richard? Because obviously to fund its working capital.
I think it depends how quick these contracts come in, I think. You know, they've got these contracts out there that take a bit of time to come in. And I think they're all right for cash at the moment, but it will depend on how fast, you know, maybe they get an agreement for a big contract and then they have to do a fundraising to be able to, you know, put it all together for them. But apparently, I think the big Q80 one, 200 million sounds big anyway, but you get a few of them come in too quick. They may need to raise funds, I suppose. But, I think it's one to keep an eye on. The chart looks good. But, bear that in mind as well.
Fine. Yeah, I mean, funding working capital usually is pretty easy because it's coming. Exactly, yeah, it's free. Okay, let's move to another one which has been a bit of a starship or a bit of a rocket ship. We go Filtronic. These do clever communication devices that goes into SpaceX as their biggest customer. The shares have just absolutely rocketed. Are you still in this stock? I mean, I know you've made a shed load of money out of it.
No, I'm only down to a small amount now. You know, the rating seemed up with events really, and you've got to be prepared by a big rating here on a pretty high chart. So there's that makes me, you know, I think I can find that sort of growth at a lot lower PE, and you know, the potential to grow just as good. But it's an exciting sort of little stock, and if they can come, because they've doubled their capacity to make these RF communications, which communicate on this Musk's Starlink satellites much faster than anything else. So he's dependent on them. He's got a 10% stake by warrants. If he takes them up, and they're sort of Starlink don't put much out to anybody. It's normally all. Vertically done. So for him to go there, and he really picked up the company as well. They said that, you know, when they get service from Filtronic, it's so good. The service is good. That's the one thing a lot of good British companies do, you know, service is doing it well. So, but the sort of like exciting thing is, I saw at the weekend, he wants to do this new constellation. It's like a million satellites in the sky. And they'd be driven by a power of a million, a constellation of satellites, of 1 million satellites that will be data centers powered by the sun. So all the data center problems down here, we're needing energy. You're now going to have a million satellites up there, if he gets his way, a million satellites floating around on a constellation, connecting to each other via lasers. It all sounds, like someone said to me, it sounds a bit like James Bond. And sorry if it's James Bond, but it's not Austin Powers. That's the thing. So it sounds very futuristic, and it's probably a long way off. But you know, sort of, if it gets the juices flowing of the people in America, and they start buying it, like, you know, buying this one up as well, then people will be saying, "Will Filtronic be involved?" Mm. And you sort of think at the moment they probably will, but you can never guarantee something else. Problem with tech is there's always someone out there who's got something that can come along, and it's not researching the company that you're invested in. It's researching all the other companies, and that's hard to do. So you research all the competitors, and someone comes along and trumps you with a new bit of technology, and you're suddenly stuck. So that's the downside with tech, I think. But apart from that, you know, it could be interesting, and they've got the results tomorrow, so I'll be an up or downer to more interesting results, and that'll be either joy or depression, I would think.
Yeah, well, watch out for that. Well, watch out for that one. Yeah. I mean, certainly, I think you obviously got an expertise in identifying bowls, but I think the last 2 years have been a better expertise in identifying potential rocket ships that have actually blasted off. So let's go to another one. We've got the got sort of like precision sort of polymers company. We've got Carlclo, which these parts go into all kinds of medical devices and high performance stuff. I mean, it was written off as a basket case when you started talking about it. I think the shares were below 10p. Anyway, they're over 50 at the moment. How do you see this one going forward? Is there still much? There's still more juice in the tank?
Well, they 10 bagged, and you know, from about, I think they went from about 8p up to 80p, which was like a 10 bag. It's over about 2 years. And now they've come back down. But even since the start of April, they're still up 100% since the start of April. So, you know, the problem was that they, I think the currency, they come out with their trading update, but because the falling dollar had caused them to say that they're going to meet their expectations aside from the currency thing. So I think their forecasts have been adjusted for a different currency. I don't think anyone was thinking the dollar. Whoever was doing the calculations there thought the dollar was going to fall. I think they were working on dollar rises. But they closed one factory, they've opened another factory out there, and instead of just punching out bits of plastic now, they do the complete specialist supply, design and supply and everything for a customer. So it's a solutions provider. And the customer just comes along and says, I want this now. They don't come along with their design and say, can you punch this out? They come along and say, this is what we want. What's the best thing? How you can do it for us? And they come up with a design and everything. So it's a much more technical company. Got quite a big pension deficit, but they've sorted that to paying out only $3.5 million a year now, which is a much smaller and more deep, you know, more less of a problem once you start making decent profits, which they're starting to do. Frank Doornbosch has been there, and he's delivered on everything. And I think he wanted to get return on capital or whatever over 20% or 25%. I think it's above that now already. And so the targets he set himself and he set for investors, the way he wanted to get to, he's met. So yeah, all you can do is back that, really. So like I say, it's not as big a hole than mine there because I did reduce some, and the other stocks going have absolutely clattered along, but who knows, you know, maybe at some time in the future I'm taking money out of Saga and going back into Goodwin for stuff when it reignites and re-excites.
Yeah, it's definitely a quality problem to have, or a nice problem to have. Okay, yeah. Let's move to stay in the industrials and automation. We've got high-speed packaging expert, MPAC. They'd also do automation for factory systems and stuff like this. They bought a couple of big acquisitions back in 2024. They integrated, and then obviously Liberation Day tariffs meant that a lot of their big customers, the whole of industry, particularly out in the US, sort of stopped purchasing, doing CapEx. But things have stabilized and the shares have rebounded nicely. What's sort of the outlook currently?
Yeah, well, like I say, they've been hot and cold quite a lot, but Holland, the CEO, he seems a decent chap, seems to know, you know, they've been acquiring...
They acquired a couple of businesses. Yeah,
that's right. And also they were involved a lot in Fryer, which was like the battery, producing these batteries on a production line. And so that was excitement for quite a while, but that's sort of all gone quiet, and it doesn't look like they've mentioned it for a while. So I think that's been put on the back burner. But of recently, they said they're going to meet forecasts, and the chart started to bottom in a bit of a bowl. So that looks quite interesting. But it bottomed right on. They took on three new non-executives quite recently. Simon Kesterton, I think it was. He used to be the CFO at Kia. So he joined them. David Squires, who used to be at BAE and Cobham. So he's another big name. But the real sort of name is matey boy Clive Wiley. He's been all over the place. He was a chairman of Delarue and STV Group and Dignity. And so I think that's been a catalyst for the chart to bottom, really. Clive Wiley seems to get in the right places at the right time. And I think probably there's a few followers of him that have gone in there as well. But basically, you know, the results are coming up not too far off, and there's a bowl on that chart. So... And with the changes in directors, then there may be a catalyst there for the company to pick up pace. So that's the reason I'd watch that one, to be honest.
Yeah, it's cheap as well. It's cheap as well. It trades at about 7x EBITDA, and it's sort of like another listed company in the States that does similar sort of thing. ATS Corp trades at about 12x EBITDA, so almost double what it is. So yeah, it looks like there's plenty of upside. Okay, let's move to another one in the industrial sector. We've got Neil is asking about Dial-A-Lite, which I think do industrial specialist LEDs for sort of high performance areas, things like chemical companies. They used to be totally written off, but the shares have done extremely well of late. Do you still own these? And
they're my third biggest company. So my third biggest holding. So you started out as Roxburgh about 15 years ago, doing LED lights, changed the Dial-A-Lite, the directors left, and they had a board there that just didn't know what they're doing. They had so many SKUs, it was unbelievable. So the CFO there was a woman called Faraya Kambabi, and she was CFO for like 5 years, and I sat there and I've been watching it for a recovery play for ages and ages, thinking, you know, I've got to get in on this one when it does bomb, because they do LEDs, but they do it for big industrials, and they have to be critically reliable and for like mining places, so they don't just sell a few LEDs, they do massive big installation LEDs for installations and stuff. So she was CFO for ages, and the shares came down and down and down. And I thought, oh, I'll get ready when I get a new board in. And then suddenly they made her CEO. And I thought to myself, oh, well, it must have been the CEO who was rubbish and the CFO has been there, you know, saying. So I expected them to, you know, recover from that. And they didn't recover from that as well. And in the end, she was ditched and they brought in Stephen Blair, who's the new CEO. And since he's got in, he's got rid of 83% of the SKUs. And he's got margins up way higher. They've cut the production facilities down, and they've targeted them all into they produce mainly out in Mexico for the US, so they're not worried about tariffs as well. They can avoid the tariffs via that. But he's just transformed the company. He's cut the SKUs right the way down. These were doing 38 pence a share EPS, 159 million sales back 10 years ago. And although it's 20% more shares now, there's also 20% more sales. So it's feasible they can get back to that 38 pence again quite easily with what he's doing there. The sales are not going up. That's the problem. But they've changed the sales force, and the salesmen are now paid on the profitability of the sales they make, not the value of the sales. So it's no good them going out and getting, you know, a £20 million order and the company makes no money on it. They got to go out and get an order, and it's got to be highly profitable for them. So that's been changed. They've bolstered the sales force. But everything he's been doing at the moment has been by, you know, cost reduction and various efficiencies. But they brought in, he kicked the CFO out, the new CFO that was in there, who'd come in. When he got in, he got rid of her, and he brought a new CFO in called Mark Fryer. Well, it didn't register with me. In the RNS, they just said he was the new CFO. But he's actually the CFO that was there when the company was running 15 years ago and it was flying. And when I watched the presentation, he knows the whole business inside out. He's been there, done it, you know, got the spreadsheet already set up on his computer from 15 years ago. So he doesn't even have to do any work. So you sort of think to yourself, what more could you want? You know, you've got a new CEO who's been in there doing it right. He's got the old CEO, managed to bring back an old CFO. And these really do have, you know, recovery potential in them, I think, you know, because they're probably trading now. I think they've already done 18 cents in trailing 12 months, and the forecast is for 17 cents earnings. And each time they come out, they say they're ahead of forecasts, and they're ahead of forecasts. And they're saying that next year will be a bigger year for them, and that the top year will be the following year. So they've got 2 years going where they're expecting to grow the earnings big, but they sound like 2 years out, they want to have the company really at full guns blazing. And so, you know, it's picked up from there. They had a legal suit, and they sued Samnita for so much money, and it backfired, and it ended up costing them $7 million. So that was something they had to deal with as well. And so there you go. But I think the chart is fantastic, and they're way off their high. Yeah. And once that, if you see next lot of results, next trading update and results, and see what the investors think. But there's a lot of good sentiment for Dialight. It's got a fan club.
Good.
Yes.
Okay. On valuation, just for a bit, it trades at about 11 times EBITDA. Well, that's forward, but the margins are obviously going to improve, and that's about consistent with one of its rivals out in the States, Acuity, which is about 11 times EBITDA. So that's a good one. Okay, yeah, let's move to another one. We've got Chris Wood. He's asking about a company that I know you've talked about before and is in strategic review. It's Audio Boom. The shares have boomed and have come down a bit because people are not sure whether they're going to sell themselves. Just any quick words on Audio Boom?
Yeah, they're not in big talks. They put themselves up for sale and they're talking to a couple of companies or something. And, you know, there were leading podcaster over here and out in the States as well. They get right up in the top rankings. Their earnings have been growing really fast. But two things that bother me is the shares are quite illiquid. So if you want a decent holding, your heart's in your mouth all the time because, you know, it goes all over the place. And you can be up and down such a lot so quickly. And the only other thing that sort of bothered me really was they just acquired a company and then they put themselves up for sale. And it just didn't seem the thing to do. You know, if you're going to put yourself up for sale, let another company, whoever buys you, decide what you want to spend your little bit of cash you've got. Let them spend it rather than you. And then if you don't get anyone buy you, then go and buy a company. But they've bought this other company in Europe, a podcast business, which should boost their trade. But that's the one thing that makes me a little bit nervous about them. So I've not got a very big holding in them now. It's only a small holding. If they get taken over, they probably get, you know, a big, big premium. But if they don't get taken over, I don't know what people will do. I don't know what people, where investors will react. So, you know,
it's funny, actually, because the valuation actually is consistent with the rest of the industry because they're trading about 1.5 times sales. And you've got Acast at 1.8 times sales. You've got SiriusXM on 2 times sales. And then you've got iHeartMedia on 1.5 times sales. So when it comes to a strategic premium, yes, they might get 30%, but I'll be surprised if you get see double. But anyway, let's move on. So, okay, let's go to the pub sector. We've got Marston's. Let's raise a glass to... one of the pub operators got quite a bit of debt. Just first of all, we've got Andy's asking about what you see in it and why you've chosen it compared to things like Young's or M&B or even Weatherspoon.
Put in a new CEO, who's Justin Platt, who came from Merlin Entertainment, and he's gone through all the pubs and they've identified three different formats that they're going to have. They've got the like Woody's, which is like a family pub chain that they're developing. So they're taking away, they've got 1,300 pubs and they're going to take a lot of the pubs and change them to this new format. So there's Woody's, which is like a family style pub. There's two door pubs, they call them, which is you've got a bar one side and a restaurant the other side. And the third one is grandstand pubs, which is like a sports pub for guys that want to go and watch Sky Sports at night and have all the entertainment there and everything else. And these three new formats have raised the sales per pub about 23% per outlet. So that's a big boost to the sales. And they're cheap, you know, but all pubs are cheap, I know that. But recently the earnings growth and everything else, they came out with a great statement and that had gone up quite a lot. And people just assume it's just the pubs sector, which is just doing a bit better, but I think it's these new pub formats is a lot of it, and the fact that he's come in and he's changed the pubs. They've got EB chargers at all the pubs now. They've got a load of EB chargers that draws people in. They use a mobile app so you can order from your table from. So people don't even have to get up, and the staff don't have to go out and ask people if they want stuff. You know, it saves a lot of time, and that boosts every sale done by the mobile. Yeah, it averages 10% higher than normal. So it increases the sales. They've got solar panels on a lot of the pubs and everything, and other tech they've used. They've got technology to manage the staff to so that you can trim down the amount of time you're using staff and having too many staff at the wrong time. So it's all AI. So he's embraced technology there as well. And the results came out, and I was sort of thinking, well, that's a good update. Okay. I had two complaints. One was that the detail in the trading update recently wasn't as good as the same time this year. He didn't give as much detail. There's a bit of difficulty there as well, because if you're refurbishing a lot of pubs and you start doing a like-for-like, what is a like-for-like? Is it, you know, the actual number of pubs you've got, or do you count these refurbished stores in there when they're different? So I suppose it's quite tricky to do the like-for-like and give a proper, you know, overview there. So, and I'm thinking, you know, they never mentioned margins. You know, last time, all these pubs come out recently and they said their sales are up 5%, 6% or whatever they were doing. And everyone's expecting their masters to say, well, we're up 11, 12% beating that. But they're obviously not. They're up about 4 or 5%, but they said their margins are higher. And no one mentioned the margins, you know. Sort of everyone I saw complaining said, oh, it's all about the sales. But if you're raising the margins within these pubs and the sales are up 23% as well, then I don't know, is it what he's doing? Is something different going on here to the other pubs? You know, where he's changing the pubs and you've got a new guy in there who understands tech. He's been with Merlin. He understands marketing and everything else. And the way they speak at the company presentations, it sounds like things are changing there, and he looks like he's doing the show. But the other pubs don't. It just seems to be that sales have picked up. You know, we're fighting off all these things from the government. So I think Marston's are actually doing better than the other pubs, and so they're cheap. You know, you're going to get a divvy once they go down below. I think he said 4x EBITDA, they're going to start paying a divvy again. And they said that's on course, so the debt's coming down as well. And it just looks like a good place. But having said that, you know, I think they could possibly, you know, if I'm right and the pub chain really is changing, I think he could really soar away. But on the other hand, if I found something that was sort of faster growing than that, you know, I'd definitely stick my money into it and probably have my money out of Masters, most of it anyway.
Let's move on to the high street. We've got retailer, we've got The Works. Sarah, she's asking about it. These guys, effectively, their USP is to sell products that get people off their smartphones and out of the digital environment to play games, do crafts, learn, and all kinds of stuff. They came out with a bit of a shocking trading update, I think, for the first half, or some results where the EBITDA was less than one. I think it was minus one. And they need to hit 12 million for the second half over Christmas. What's your sort of your latest on this one? Very cheap.
It is cheap. And it's crazy cheap, really, because I think they're on a P of about 3. And in this first half, their actual losses were about 1.3 million less than the first half last year, I think. So if you look at that, they're actually ahead of last year where they did 7.5p EPS. They said they're going to do that. Their problem is they've got an online business. And it never makes money. It's never made money. And I think they should just ditch it because it doesn't matter. Just have a site up there that shows you the products, but you don't do sales via it, because their fulfillment places have always messed up. And they got rid of their last fulfillment people. And they said, this time we've got a new fulfillment company. I understand. And then they come out the first time and said, online we've made a loss again because the fulfillment company messed up and they've owned up to it. And it's that. And I just think, when you've got a business like this, how much of your online steals business from the rest of your business? You know, you go and sell stuff online, and it's something they probably would have walked into the store, bought the same thing, and picked up a few other bits as well while they were in there. So I'm not convinced, you know, that the cost of running a store, you're selling like a 12 quid parcel of, you know, a jigsaw puzzle and a couple of paint canvases, and you wrap that up and you send it, and you do, how much do you actually make on like little things like that? You want to be selling 200 quid worth, small packages that get out there quick. So a lot of these stores don't think they're really sorted for doing online. And this one in particular Speaking to them, they want to get it to where it's break even. They'll be happy to get it to break even. And then they think that at least it's break even, it's not costing them anything. And they might, it might be feeding people to the high street. I don't think it does. And I would literally sell it. So, but if they can get it to break even and they seem confident that the second half, the company's, the procurement, their fulfillment company is sorting things out in the second half, then I think they're probably on a PE of 3. But, you know, somebody in there is still selling like mad at this point, and I wonder, I don't know, but it just looks mad on a PE of 3 to me. It could be, you know,
yeah.
One of those great I bought it last April, and it went up about 200%, and then it come back off, and I made about 100%, and I was out. And you know, maybe I'll do the same again next April when April comes this year. You know, just look at them, and because everything's got a price. You know, someone come wandering along, like a car factory might come in and sort of store. They've got loads of little small stores, and it's sort of in car factory like, and you probably roll the two into one next door to each other and buy bigger stores and split them in half, and works one side, car factory the other, maybe.
Yeah, well, with a three of PE, I mean, clearly investors don't believe the E on it in for the second half. So, okay, just on.
They end up the year with about 7 million net cash as well each year. They'll have about 7 million net cash this year as well. £19 million market cap.
Yeah. You mentioned Card Factory. We've got Mark Clenshaw. He's also asking about Card Factory. I know it's been a Cockney Rebel favourite in the past. The shares, they came out again with another difficult trading update. I think it was before the year end, basically saying footfall on the high street has impacted them. These guys are the number one provider, obviously, of cards and gifts and stuff. What was your latest on this one?
I think it's a struggle, isn't it? Because they're selling more products that are not cards now. The real money for them was in cards, because they make the cards themselves. They print and design, you know, so it's big, high, vertically integrated, high margin stuff. And once you start buying in goods from China to sell, the margins just go down. So the margins are squeezed in that way. Postage, you know, I've been watching the BBC talking about postage, and over Christmas, it's abysmal the amount of letters that got to people at the right time. You know, my birthday's Boxing Day. I'm still waiting for my birthday card from my sister. And it's not arrived yet. So, and she has sent it. So it's us, and they're £1.75 for first class. I think 87 pence or something like that for second class, somewhere around there. And you sort of think, you know, my wife went out and got about 50 second class stamps for Christmas, done our Christmas cards. She came back and said that was 40 quid. I said, what? So she said, yeah, that's 87 pence. I said, second class, yeah, second class. You sit there and you think to yourself, for people who are not that well off, 40 quid for Christmas cards starts to sound a lot if you send 50 Christmas cards out. And I'm sort of wondering how we got to that point. And because if you can send someone a Christmas card first class, what am I saying? You know they forgot you and you're a last-minute thought, because they've used first-class stamp. Paid an extra pound to get it to you quick. So people are reluctant to use the first-class stamps, I suppose, and for cost and for that. And so I think that's a struggle. And I bought Funky Pigeon, and you know, that might actually get their online side off, but I still come to the same thing with these. How much does online, you know, cannibalise the rest of your business when you're in the high street everywhere? Does someone sit here and say, oh, I'll order a card online, and it prevents them going to the shop where they would have picked up a card, a parcel, and this, that, and the other? Far easier than you do when you go online. So, you go and pick up a card, and you don't sit there and browse through the whole of the rest of their website to look for things to go with that card. But when you walk in a shop, you walk past a little furry toy, a bar of chocolate, and stuff like that, and that's where the good sales come from. And I think the online cannibalizes a lot of this stuff for small businesses, and I think you have to realize that. And so that's where we are with card. It's not one for me at the moment. There's better places, you know, like, a lot of people mention stocks to me and they say, what about this and that? And you've got to sit down and say, is that the best place for your money when the market's like this? Or could I find something that's far better, that's, you know, steaming away? And you're more confident. So a lot of time, I'd actually buy more Goodwin and Saga than what a lot of people mentioned to me, you know, because I just sort of think there's so much more in them and so much more likely than, you know, finding stuff that good and that likely is difficult. You know, a lot of these things you've got to have a lot of trust in, and, you know, you've got to have a bit in other stuff, but just think about where you're putting all this stuff, really, and are you diversifying too much and diluting your gains down?
Okay, let's just go to we've got technology again, or chips. We've got Drew and Zik Tomek both asking about CML Microsystems. I know we talked about it briefly last time. The shares haven't really sort of performed. These guys do specialist chips for communications, low power. They go into geostationary sort of satellite constellations, and they also do things like for base stations and sort of like devices, yeah, so sort of like communication devices, not mobile phones, but and internet yes. things and digital radios. Any quick thoughts on this one?
Well, yeah, they brought in this guy who because they do this new radio now, don't they? Which is supposed to be taken off in India. It's all getting the okay signed off by the Indian government and various people that have to sign these things off. And the last statement they said sounded like things were going honky-dory, and they brought the guy in from they acquired a company, and the guy who has come with the company there and who's doing this radio, and it seems to go a bit. The only problem with it is it's illiquid and it doesn't have news flow. And so, you know, when there's no results coming up or anything else, people just get bored and they sell. And then, so you've got to sit around and you've got to wait ages. And in the meantime, something better comes up. So most of my CML went, you know, 6 months ago or so, 3 months and 4 months ago, when I bought more Goodwin and Saga and places where I had to find cash from. So I still think they're probably going to do really well, but it's probably not the best place for my money at the moment. So I dropped that and see where we go. But it has the potential to go up really big because they're the only one that's got this. They've literally got the market cornered on this radio that goes out. It's going to go out for all Asia and helps everybody contact each other really cheaply. And if that picks up over Asia, they're going to sell absolutely millions of these chips, probably billions of these chips, which will be really big. So when it does happen, you probably have time to jump on the gains early if you're aware and you pay attention. But at the moment, it's too slow in a market like this. You know, 6 months ago, I might have thought it was quite attractive, but things have moved on.
Okay, good. We've got last question. We've got Oliver. He's asking about Warpaint, the cosmetics challenger business. The shares have come down from about high of about £5 at the sort of 12 months ago to just under £2.50 or £2.30 at the moment. How do you see this one?
One of the brokers put a note out a couple of weeks ago saying it was time for another look, a fresh look at it, and that it had 100% upside on it from here. And so that sort of looked interesting. And I was having a look, and it's JP Morgan. I think they were 9% short at some point, or 12% short on this, and they've just been closing all their shorts. So they've all been going, and there's a trading statement due probably this week sometime. And if you look just over the last week or two, there's a nice bowl that's just created on the chart and gone up. So I started buying them last week when they were a little bit lower than this, knowing that JP Morgan, the chart was just starting to make a bit of a bowly bottom, and I've had my eye on them to buy them back for quite a while. And at this price, something like eyes, lips, face, and out in the US, yeah. It's Elf.
Elf Beauty,
You know, they must be looking at these at this level, thinking this would be a nice acquisition, having them just moved in on their Warpaint, park their tank on their lawn. And it might be good just to take them out at this sort of price, who knows? But either way, they look cheap down here. So, and the bowl and JP Morgan suddenly wants to close their short for some reason. So it's for probably the same reason that they wanted to buy 12% of the company. You know, they're probably very well researched, possibly.
Good. Okay, so, well,
we've
just come to the end. We've got a big final question. Other than, obviously, Goodwin, Saga and Dialolite, who you hold very big positions on, any other Zulu potential stocks that you'd sort of highlight specifically, maybe one we've already mentioned or another one that that people can sort of have a good look at as well?
Not too many Zulus about at the moment. Janelle's a Zulu, which is a possible, but it's illiquid, and they've got this new CCTV for trains and transport things, which is they've acquired, which will be quite interesting to.
What ticker is that? Is that Genel Energy or
Journeo.
Oh, Journeo. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah, these guys, so basically Journeo, but just for investors, they basically do. They're an expert in all things transportation, aren't they? CCTV surveillance. Yeah.
So they might, but the growth rate there doesn't look fantastic at the moment. So until we know what the acquisition does, you need a higher growth rate to be really a decent Zulu. But I suppose really the only things I would say that a recovery play is worth watching, probably Victrex and S4 Capital. They're two at the moment that I'd watch. Victrex have got their trading update end of the week. The directors have been buying. They pay a 9% yield. And they reckon they'll maintain that 9% yield as long as the EBITDA doesn't go above 0.5, I think. It's at 0.34 at the moment, times. So as long as that stays around here, I reckon. And the directors have just bought shares. They've got a new CFO in there as well. So I just wonder, you know, this is one that makes Peak, which is like they're not a competitor with Goodwin on their Decoya. They make a cheap plasticky version, you know, but probably the sort of stuff that tight Dysons would use in their vacuum cleaners and stuff. It's not critically, but it's got to be strong plastic. So, and they use them in brakes and stuff like that as well. So they've got like a polymer, which they sell a lot of. And so that could be a recovery. And I just noticed S4 as well, you know, they come out and said that they're going to pay a 1p dividend if they get their way, and their debt's going to be below 100 million when they said 100 to 140 million. And I sort of think this AI stuff is really kicking on. Someone showed me saying that they took my Substack and put it through some AI thing, and it ran up a 17-page PDF document, all with graphics and highlights of everything I said, all my words, just done like that in 15 minutes. And I thought, well, I used to be a graphic designer. I wouldn't have wanted to do that job. It would have taken me a week, and I would have wanted to charge a fortune. And he'd done what I could do in 15 minutes with this thing, and it was fantastic. And because that's what like the likes of S4 are doing, is teaching these companies now how to do your own design with your own marketing and design with their software, I suppose. So that's what the future is. And he said, you know, I know Martin Sorrell's pretty close to Keir Starmer when it comes to the love that people have for him in the market. But sometimes you've got to hold your nose a bit. And sometimes saying to yourself, well, it could be money to be made here. So that looks quite interesting on a recovery plan, a little bulge just on the chart. Mm. They come out 6 months ago and said, right, earnings were going to be higher in the second half than the first half. And, you know, did people not believe it? And they've come out and the trading statement was as good as it says, and talking about paying a 1p dividend, which is like nearly 4%, I think. And if they pay that as well, you know, people are going to wake up and sort of get the hate out of them. You know, I've looked at S4 for years and thought, I hate you. And then saw myself buying them last week. I ain't bought many. It's not a massive holding, but I sort of think that's the sort of thing. When you look at that chart, yeah, and there's a dilution, I think the dilution is about 80% from that high. So the previous high really is about £5.50 in new money. And we're down at 25 pence. And then, you know, you just sort of think, what? He's done WPP, hasn't he? And he's there, and it's a new world. He doesn't seem to want to give in. And so that could be interesting. I think that's the sort of thing that I really like to see, and as a chart, and way off the top and no real reason for it, and depth starting to fall. You know, it's down below 100 million now, and he was talking about 100 to 140 million. So he's probably left a bit of powder dry to show off in the results as well when they actually come out. So we'll see on that one.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks very much for those. They've got. I'll have a good look through Journeo and Victrex. I actually own Victrex and the and S4 Capital, which is certainly something I've written off for dead as every other investor. So that'll be fascinating. So thanks again, Richard. I hope Arsenal win the Premiership and even perhaps do the double with the Champions League, because you've certainly done the double on the old share, speaking for the last 12 months. So really well done. Thanks, everyone, for your questions. And look forward in touching base in 6 months' time.
Yeah, lovely. All right, Paul. Thanks. Enjoyed it. Goodbye, everybody.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.